Welcome to Imagine This Podcast,
the show where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredibly vibrant arts and culture community in a new way.
So Oscar's coming up this weekend. I know David's been on a journey to watch as many of the movies as possible.
Hello to you too, Lindsay. Hello to you too. Hello to you too. Hello,
look, David. I'm getting right down to it this week.
So this is like after last week.
Other experiences. Go ahead, David.
Of course, after last week where Lindsay was like, after the fact, hey, can we cut down our intro? So she's really jumping right in.
Jumped right in the middle. I get it. But I just would like to say hello. Thank you, listeners, for listening to this podcast. We know there are so many options you could be doing right now.
Like watching the Oscar-nominated movies.
All right. Back to you, Lindsay. You can take us into the agenda. Go ahead.
I think it's well established. I don't waste any time. So we're getting right to the point.
Fair enough.
Continue. But I got to say, you know, I think the only movie I've watched possibly that's nominated is Nomadland. And I found it to be really, really haunting and a little bit tough to get through during a pandemic. But ultimately, glad I
think that was the pull quote on the promo. Quote, a little tough to get through in the pandemic, says Lindsay Sheridan, Imagine MKE.
You didn't have the feeling of uplift and like sort of the connections of humanity as these itinerant workers sort of leave their corporate day jobs and everything else and sort of hit the road for a life of freedom and mutual aid and support.
Sure, I'll co-sign on that. A little bit of angst about the Amazon machine.
Come on, that is all about that is all a positive PR for Amazon, right? I mean, the Frances McDormand character goes back at the end.
That's right.
Those spoilers, right. Dudes. Like people, I didn't watch it.
I don't think that's a spoiler. The draw of corporate America, the draw of large corporations is always going to win.
Man.
Anyway, if you listeners, if you watch Nomadland and have a more nuanced take than I.
I'm scanning the Oscar nominations and I did see a movie that had a nomination. And that was the Eurovision Song Contest, The Story of Fire Saga.
Yeah.
I did see that movie. And Husavik is the original song nomination. I will say that it was fine. That movie was okay. You know, I this is what I walked away with. Rachel McAdams is a very good sport. Rachel McAdams is a terrific actress in Game for the Challenge. But otherwise, that was just a strange movie. I didn't really understand Dan Stevens' character's motivation in that at all.
Dan Stevens from Downton Abbey, he's in it?
Yeah, he's kind of like the bad guy, but there are no real bad guys in it. I don't know. It's weird. That's Husavik, a Eurovision Song Contest. Good luck. Good luck, y'all. Hopefully. So that's my contribution to
Of course, people are listening to this after the fact that these awards have been given out, right? So we are recording this pre-Oscars, but it'll come out post-Oscars on Tuesday. So we're sort of...
How dare you, David, share the magic that is
our
that. You just This is... yeah, this... This is the Schrodinger's box. They may have won. They may not have won.
Are our takes worth nothing, David?
Yeah.
No. Absolutely. They are worth the captivate money that we pay every month to publish these podcasts.
I did see Mulan. Mulan's nominated for, I believe, costume design. I did see Mulan. I paid the $30.
Wow.
To watch it.
Wow. Well, I guess for your whole family, that's about as much money as you pay to go to the movie theaters.
Yeah, I will share the opinion that once there was no like singing cricket or whatever, or singing like animal, dragon or something, I was like, why are we doing this? What's the point of all this? So it's a fantastical movie that we made less fantastical. Like, what are we doing? So there you go. That was my pull quote for Mulan. Why are we doing this? Mac Antigua. Imagine MK.
Nice.
So speaking of the Oscars, there's Milwaukee ties, right, David, to the Oscars. You want to bring up Oscars and tying in. It's not just limited to our friends on the coasts.
Yeah.
There's a Milwaukee connection to the Oscars.
Well, I don't know about this year, but certainly throughout the years, right? I think we often talk about the fact that our region, our state produces a lot of great talent. Oh, by the way, I should note that the one Milwaukee connection, or at least the one Imagine MKE connection, Shaka King, director of Judas and the Black Messiah, up for Best Picture this year, Vassar grad, class of 2001.
Oh, I knew it.
Of course.
Ha, 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 I did it.
I was waiting for what's the tie? What's the cool tie, everybody?
It's Vassar.
He just went to a lovely school in the Hudson Valley.
How are you not a trustee of Vassar by now? How are you not a trustee for all the stumping you do for Vassar?
Let's start the campaign.
Let's start the David Lee Board of Trustees.
But I think we'd have to hear more about Vassar then, and I'm not sure I'm ready for that.
Yeah, exactly. That would necessitate more Vassar content. Until they give us a promo code to get into that college, I'm not going to pump them any more than I need to.
That's right. So over the last few years, right, we've had some really great Milwaukeeans or former Milwaukeeans connected to the Oscars. Most notably, Mark Rylance won Best Supporting Actor for Bridge of Spies, which is super cool. And he's also in The Trial of the Chicago 7, the other sort of late 60s Oscar-nominated Best Picture this year. The fact that Mank nominated, right? Orson Welles, little known fact, is from Kenosha. I had no idea. And as somebody who studied film and Orson Welles being the titan of film history that he is, no idea that he's from our neighbor to the south.
Mm. What else we have here? John Ridley,
of course,
has won for
good friend John Ridley.
Friend of the organization. For 12 Years a Slave, right? Wrote the screenplay, I believe, right?
That's right.
Original screenplay. And then Justin Hurwitz won Best Score for La La Land.
Yeah.
Mm. That wasn't the one where they read it incorrectly, was it? No.
He actually won Best Score.
That was non-controversial. That was non-controversial.
The movie's announcement was controversial.
Ooh. I wonder if that's like, is that akin to like when you stand over a railing, which I don't do because I'm afraid of heights, and you think, I'm going to jump. Like, I'm going to read the wrong name. Do you think that like runs through some presenter's mind every time they say the thing? Like,
didn't they get like actually the wrong envelope? It wasn't actually, they had the word, the movie in their head
given
that they just
envelope.
Read incorrectly. They just had, they got past the wrong envelope. Which is
how does the wrong envelope get created? One would think that the dude in the suitcase would have been like, oh, don't take that one. Keep it in. I'm glad we're litigating this and looking for the... I'm glad we're spending precious
time. No one has talked about this thing that happened here.
For three years. I know, yeah. I love that we're bringing it back.
There is scholarship about this, though, because I remember the moment, right? Like, how the hell did that happen?
How did that happen?
And what a great moment, right? For a small movie like Moonlight to have won. I think that's actually... a really interesting thing about this year's Academy Awards, right, is that like you have a lot of movies that would normally, I think, not have the shine, right, of this moment, such as Nomadland or a movie like Minari or Judas and the Black Messiah, for example.
Not nominated this year, but bears mentioning, of course, is Willem Dafoe, also known as the Green Goblin. If you enjoy those Spider-Mans,
that's right.
Spider-Men, plural. He left UWM, so that doesn't make him an alum, does it? ? To join Theater X, which is now defunct. He's a four-time nominee, but Theater X was originally cited at where the Woodland Pattern is in River West. Mm-hmm. And was one of the oldest experimental theater companies in America until 2004.
I think the thing that I found really interesting, and I think that this is related to our work and something that I think is really important, right, is like how do we create and how do we keep a vibrant ecosystem of small organizations that can support, you know, new voices, new talent to do work in our city. And I think... Mac, you and I were talking about how, like, you know, as Milwaukee, we have some really interesting and unique opportunities, given that we're cheaper to live in. The cost of living is a little lower than other places. And so your overhead, right, if you're sort of a young artist or a young theater artist or whomever, you have this opportunity to do more experimental things. And it seems like there aren't... though as many of those sorts of places now in our ecosystem. Mm-hmm. I think there are a few, right? And I think as we are coming out of this pandemic, how are we sort of, how is our community coming together to ensure that these smaller, these small groups have the space to perform and continue to provide venues for you know, the diverse voices and more experimental voices in our community to show.
Yeah, so I think that's right, David. And again, Milwaukee currently has an abundance of emerging voices and platforms, and we need to do our best to make sure that they're sustained. But an ecosystem not just has little, but has varying sizes, right? You've got the emerging groups, you got groups that are established, and you've also got the known platforms, like the known stages. And among them, I think in Milwaukee, one of the most important stages we have is the Marcus Center for the Performing Arts.
That's right. So this week we have on Kendra Whitlock Ingram, who's the relatively new president and CEO of the Marcus Performing Arts Center. And Kendra, before this, she'd held a lot of senior leadership positions at major performing arts institutions, including the Newman Center for the Performing Arts at the University of Denver, Omaha Performing Arts, Shenandoah University, Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. Yeah, I worked there. And the Detroit Symphony. So Kendra holds an MBA from the University of Nebraska, Omaha, and a Bachelor of Music Education from Duquesne University. And she has a rich professional background, having been a fellow with the League of American Orchestras, a faculty member in arts management programs, and a board member for places like the Broadway League and the Association of Performing Arts Professionals. So we're really excited to have Kendra on after the break.
Welcome, Kendra.
Thank you, Mac.
Thanks for modulating mirroring back. That means you're a pro. Sound pro. You're totally mirrored back.
Not here to play.
No, this is going to be great. This is going to be like Nixon Frost. We're just going to go at each other.
Wait, am I Nixon? Wait.
You're like, wait, I don't want to be Nixon.
I don't want to be.
What does that make Lindsay in this? I think Nixon, Lindsay's Frost. Lindsay gets to be Frost, and I'll be the really long microphone, like really like the 70s.
That makes sense. Yeah.
That makes sense. Oh, thanks so much for joining us. And we were just sort of sharing before we were recording, you know, you're coming back and forth in an office. You have to factor in a commute now that you're physically emerging from the pandemic. So thanks for taking the time for being with us today on Imagine This Podcast. We're so excited to have you aboard. I'm going to defer to Lindsay to kick it off, because this, I like to call this the Lindsay question, as she made this famous. So it's, I'm
that's gonna defer right. Famous. Yes. Thank you, Mac. So we always like to set the tone for the rest of the conversation by asking you if you have a memory of an arts and culture experience early in your life that really left a strong imprint on you.
You know, I was really lucky. My mom always loved opera, symphony, ballet. Like, she was an arts and culture consumer all her life. And, you know, my dad was more of a sports guy, you know, basketball and that sort of thing. So, you know, when I was a little kid, like six, I remember, you know, I was basically her plus one for any of the community concert series that came to Scranton. So I'm from Scranton, Pennsylvania, originally.
I think you're the most famous person from Scranton, Kendra. I think you're the most famous person.
You know, maybe after Joe Biden.
Who? Who?
And then after Michael Scott.
So I
grew up in Scranton, and you know, a lot of cities like Scranton in the 70s and 80s had this community concert series where a lot of some of the biggest names in arts and culture would tour, you know, all these cities around the East Coast, because it was, you know, pretty easy from New York. So like everybody came through Scranton, you know, Itzhak Perlman, Kathleen Battle, Yo-Yo Ma,
wow,
all these dance companies and opera companies. So I was, even when I was probably not ready to sit through a 3-hour production of Tosca, I was there because I was just going to like absorb it half the time falling asleep with the opera. But the thing that really was just like, oh my God, what is this thing? Was there was a touring production of Swan Lake that the Pittsburgh Ballet Theater was touring around Pennsylvania. And she took me to Swan Lake. It was probably, I'd say, third grade, you know, and I had been a regular a tender of things. Like I had seen a lot of stuff by this point. And that was just like, what is this thing? This music, first of all, like this music is just blowing my mind. And my mom had all these records. So like all, I started like kind of digging through records and I found this Swan Lake, this Tchaikovsky Swan Lake. And I remembered like every section. I had the program book and I was like looking at every section. And this is like 8-year-old Kendra, you know, and coming up with my own, you know, choreography and like, this is when this happens and that was that. So I would say that's probably one of the most influential, strangely enough, because I'm, you know, I didn't go into dance or, you know, I did start my career in classical music, but that really, like when they talk about kids, like things that really impact kids as a kid, like that was like, okay, wow, this is amazing. This is amazing. I can't stop thinking about it. Amazing. I'm playing that record over and over. Amazing. Like it's Michael Jackson Thriller, which I also had right around that time on cassette.
Give so, a little time and perspective. That gives people like they're all measuring their, okay, what year? All right. Got it. Cassette. Yep. All right.
Yeah.
I want to hopefully for the future producer, David, just break that break of how Kendra reacted. Just noting, because that's how we want to do the, what made you feel like that? Because that was like the wonder. That was like the perfect amount of wonder that we're looking for in terms of that. And then the second thing that strikes me, Kendra, is I bet for those folks at Swan Lake that day, they're like, oh, we got to do a matinee in Scranton. Mm-hmm. Fine. But in the audience, you were there, right? You were, they didn't know that the future leader of the Marcus Center for the Performing Arts would be watching. And that, isn't that something, right? Like you never know in that audience who's there. And
that's, you know, I've had this experience with a couple artists where I saw another one is the famous soprano Kathleen Battle, who if you guys may not be aware, but she has a reputation.
And is that where the word diva comes from? Is that where the word diva comes from?
Right? Let's go back to the root. Not saying those words.
No,
I'm just
I said
saying,
them. You didn't. I said you I'm have to work saying. With these people. I don't. So I said.
But you know, she also had a real impact on me. And I was probably around the same age, like maybe 8 or 9, when I saw her in the recital in Scranton. And I never told her this because I've now programmed her, I booked her, and worked with her several times, like probably 4 or 5 times. But like, again, like to your point, never in a million years would you think like 8 or 9 year old Kendra in the 80s seeing this woman sing, this Black woman sing opera in Scranton, Pennsylvania, that I would then be the one responsible for, you know, bringing her to Detroit or Denver or, you know, whatever. And it's just, it is kind of funny to think like that, you know, like this, the impacts that like this kind of stuff does make on kids. Because it really does. Like it's, I am a true testament to that. And I'm one of many.
But it's just, it's a micro reminder, Kendra, you know, I'm sure for Lindsay, who's performed, you know, and as a, you sing as well as you perform an instrument, you know, I used to do improv, right? How many times, and you perform, how many times there's like a show where you're like, oh God, I'm not feeling it. I got to go do it. But you don't know who's in the audience.
Right.
That night, somebody's going to watch it. And that could be like, that's a show where I wanted to do that thing. I got to see that. And that's it's hard when you're in the grind, but that you're, this is a reminder of how many times have I phoned it in, Kendra. That's pretty much how but I think that's the power of the opportunity of performance. And that's so awesome now that Marcus is coming back, right? Like they get to have those moments again and who knows.
Right. That's exactly right. We're planning on it.
I also appreciate how sophisticated your answer is, because as you talked about, you know, making up choreography and dancing, you know, in your living room or your room, or whatever. My memory went to me doing the same, but to the Shrek soundtrack. So your story is much better.
I mean, come on.
Nothing wrong with that. I love that show.
I mean, Smash Mouth makes us all move. So I don't.
Yeah,
I don't,
exactly.
Can you book Smash Mouth next at the Kennedy Center for the Arts?
You know,
you got that kind of
pull. I'll see if I can pull it away from you.
You'll make that happen. You'll make sure they get one of those medallions, and that President Biden gives them. For Lindsay Sheridan, who once danced in her living room too.
That's right.
Yes.
All star. Thank you for launching the careers of arts administrators. Mm-hmm. All right, back to the business. You know, Kendra, we talked about you performed music, a couple instruments for sure that you majored in, and you've also, I've read some interviews. Actually, I do research, believe it or not. I like to use Google. You talked about how you always thought you're going to be a music teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Someday. You envisioned that, and then you also got your undergrad degree in education. But you've also, you know, you come to Milwaukee, really, as you know, performing arts venue management, orchestra management in Denver, Omaha, Baltimore, Detroit. Mm-hmm. I don't know if like 9-year-old you was dancing around like, I'm going to book this person someday. Like that wasn't the arc, right? You're, do you remember the moments that would foretell you stepping into more of a backstage role?
You know, it's so, again, so funny, like the things we do as kids that kind of predict, you know, where we land. Part of me kind of knew that I was going to do this. Like even as an educator, I knew that I was going to be a producer or a presenter or a coordinator of programming. When I was 16, I, you know, entered this contest, this composition contest to, you know, for like high school kids. And I wrote a concerto, which was like, you know, about 9 minutes all in. Each movement was like 3 minutes, but it was for a violin and a small string ensemble. So I had to be an orchestra contractor. I had to be a personnel contractor. So I'm like calling up my friends. They're like, what do you need me to do? I'm like, can you just look at the parts? You don't have to, it's not that hard. You know, we're going to set it up in my parents' living room. I found a recording studio that'll do it for $60. We got 4 hours. My mom said she'd pay for it. So like everyone's like, well, okay. I'm like, there'll be pizza. I'm like, okay. So like, this is 16-year-old Kendra. Okay. So like, I kind of always had this like putting a show together. Mm. I wish I had taken pictures of that, because it was like, you know, these 8 or 9 kids in my parents' living room and me, and I'm like, oh no, we got to do that again. No, this is supposed to sound like this. And then we all, you know, schlepped down to the recording studio, which was downtown. And it was just awesome. So, but like, I kind of knew I was going to do this. And then when I got to college, undergrad, you know, I came from Scranton's, like, you know, fairly small town, 75,000 people. And then I went to school in Pittsburgh, which was definitely a big city. Mm. And I was like, oh, wow. Like there are these, I started meeting people in the business, like in running opera or Pittsburgh Symphony. And like, oh, this is a gig. This is actually like somebody gets paid to do this stuff. And I'm like, I'd never even thought of that as an option. And, you know, back in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, there were no arts administration degrees. Like you know, some people were double majoring, but that was nearly impossible as an education major, because you had to do all your music stuff. Plus you had to do basically the equivalent of what an education major that's, you know, not arts focused had to do. So it was a pretty heavy load. But yeah, I think I would say the moment where I'm like, career wise, I pretty much knew by my junior year, I was definitely going to finish this education degree, but I'm like, yeah, I want to be either a producer or a presenter or somebody that's kind of, you know, managing the arts rather than teaching.
But doing what you're talking about does require, it's like learning by doing, right? Yes. You're not going to learn that in a classroom. You got to book the gigs to learn how to book the gigs, right?
And yeah, you know.
So yeah, that's
changed. That.
Okay,
changed a little bit. You know, now, and you guys probably know this, now that you can find an arts administration or music business or arts management degree program, even an undergraduate, which, you know, that just didn't exist. Now, part of that, I think, is just people's feeling about, you know, arts and higher education and like, I want to have a backup plan or whatever. But part of it is also people are like, yeah, I really love the arts and I you know, maybe performing is not for me, but how can I stay engaged and how can I contribute? So these degree programs, I think, have popped up really out of necessity, because people want to, you know, have some sort of academic expertise, even though, to your point, Mac, you know, you're not going to know, you can read all the things in a book, but it's not until, you know, you get that writer and so-and-so wants, you know, the blue M&Ms taken out of the M&M bowl. And, you know, you're dealing with someone on stage who's like, I'm not going on until you know, get me a steroid shot in my backside. Oh. Real story.
Kendra, I'm imagining like that story of you booking that concerto thing. Like if there is a photo, you see all these like happy kids, like teens eating pizza, and you're in the back room smoking a cigarette. just looking like, yeah, I got to deal with these.
Oh my
You're haggling with like the pizza delivery guys. Like, you short me $5. It's like, just go. Yes. All right, listen, I just, come on, let's see.
Well, like, there definitely was a moment in the recording studio where everyone's just hanging out and I'm like talking to the recording engineer, like, you know, could you put more reverb on it? Like, that's cool. Like, it's really cool, the reverb. I'm like, I've never heard that. Like, how do you do that? Like, we're in this dry room. He's like, okay.
But you were in it. You were ready to like fake it till you make it through that conversation. You're like, oh yeah, reverb, I'm ready.
it was really out of not know. Like, I was like so fascinated because, you know, they play it back. They played it back to us, like the recording. I'm like, wow, how did you make it sound like that? Like, it's like we're in a concert hall. He's like, yeah, that's kind of what we do. I'm like,
he's like, he didn't realize he was doing career day. In that moment, he's like, correct. I'm doing career day or not. I'm doing this.
That is exactly it. Yeah. So yeah, I think it kind of hit me before it hit me. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of knew before I actually made the decision. And then when I got accepted into this orchestra management fellowship, you know, as I was graduating my senior year, I'm like, yeah, this is where I'm going, orchestra management. And I tell people orchestra management, like, I was mostly in the general manager role. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like running a sports team. So the general manager, like, deals with the union, with the players, it deals with the coach, which is the music director, you know, it runs the operations, and
you
all
have to deal with sports, radio, orchestra talk radio, then on Mondays, I can't believe they sounded awful last Thursday.
Right, what's right. Ingram so doing up there?
What, she's crazy. She's just killing us. She's just totally killing us. Over there. All the stress.
But fun.
Well, I love that through line of high school, you just in your gut knowing I can do this, I can organize all of these elements, and that really following you through to a career in orchestra management and performing arts management. And I'm curious. You've lived in all of these cities following your career, and now you find yourself in Milwaukee. And as you're settling into Milwaukee, what are you finding about our city that feels similar to those other places, that feels distinct and different?
Yeah, I think, you know, the appetite for live entertainment here is really, really strong. And I would say, compared to other cities I've been, Denver was like that too. Denver, at one point, was NEA had said that they had the highest number of tickets sold for arts and culture of any city in the United States, like Denver. And I feel like Milwaukee's like that. I mean, we have a number of venues. We have a number of arts organizations. We have, you know, Pabst Theater Group, who's doing a phenomenal job on, you know, bringing a lot of live entertainment, which would probably miss the market, frankly, if you know, they weren't here. And we have people go to stuff. Like, I think somebody said to me once, well, do you think Milwaukee has too many venues? I'm like, absolutely not. Like, it's not like people aren't going, you know, it's not like we're not filling those up. So, so that's one thing I noticed that's similar. You know, another thing, you know, again, growing up in Scranton, I feel like Milwaukee is like a big city version of Scranton, you know, diverse, like real distinct neighborhoods. That's one of the things I really loved about it when I was first looking at this position. And frankly, being in a city with, you know, more racially diverse folks, that was really important to me and to my husband that, like, you know, we wanted to be in a city where there are a lot of different kinds of people. And I think, you know, when you look at like Detroit, like Baltimore, you know, Denver and Omaha, when I think about those places, you know, they're great cities too. And we found things that we loved about living in both of those places. But, you know, I think there's something to be said for a city like Milwaukee, where you just have a real mix of people. And it really contributes, I feel like, to the cultural vitality and frankly, making it a great place to live. So, you know, there's challenges everywhere, but, you know, to your question of the similarities and differences, I think, you know, Milwaukee has a lot going for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I got to think you take this opportunity seeing growth and possibility in terms of that. And one of the things about growth and possibility I want to dig into is this notion of, this is happening in all fields, not just arts and culture, is this notion of inclusion and equity, right? Mm-hmm. I'll say personally, like, the word diversity is like a tough word for me.
Me too.
Just because of, it feels safe in some way, right?
100%.
Like, you know, super safe. right? Because we're not speaking to why isn't it diverse? What are the barriers right. that have prevented such diverse
and
happening,
and
right?
what do you mean by diversity?
And what do you mean?
That,
you know,
that's
and
what I'd like to ask. When you right? say diversity, what do you
what do you mean, right? So we're kind of digging into it now, how it can be very jargonized and trendy. Like, these things matter, right? Yeah. These are vehicles for real power and privileged things, which result in who gets to see the arts, who gets to experience, again, we're coming back to our industry, right? But for you, it's been central. Right. Yes. You sort of named it. This is a central part of it. This is not going to be a fad for you. You came not just for the opportunity that Milwaukee that provides, but also the opportunity for growth, because Milwaukee has yes. a long way to go. Yeah. Right. Like a lot of places. That's my great generalization. Mm-hmm. Like other places. But let's hashtag real talk. You know, outcomes for African-Americans in the city. Not great. Right. So that's an indicator of things like that. I guess, you know, how are you going to keep race and equity in the center of the arts, given your role, you know, here at the Marcus? You know, tell us about ways, maybe challenges you've already experienced, or what are examples of practices that have inspired you either here or other places that you might be looking to amplify up. So just free reign, have a swing.
Free reign. Well, yeah. I'll tell you, I really what really resonates with me is what you said about diversity, because, you know, I would say, honestly, up until George Floyd's murder, I, working in mostly predominantly white-led institutions and white-centric institutions, people had a real hard time talking about racial equity.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a biracial Black woman, and often being the only person of color, certainly the only Black person, in these kinds of organizations, like, I felt a little bit like, should I be the one saying, like, well, what are we really talking about? We're really talking about racial equity, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, who has a sense of belonging in arts and culture? You know, LGBTQIA community, the arts and culture community has embraced, you know, individuals. You know, I feel like, you know, is there a sense of belonging for that group? Is there a sense of belonging for maybe some folks with, you know, different disabilities or different physical abilities may feel a little less belonging or more belonging depending on the organization. But when you really boil it down, in my mind, with the arts and culture industry, racial equity and racial diversity in our industry is challenged.
Yeah,
we do not have that overall. And as you say, I'm talking in broad strokes, that, you know, Black and brown folks in particular have not found a sense of belonging in a lot of our arts and culture organizations. So, you know, I felt like when I came into my first executive director position in Denver, I was also working for a university, which, you know, is like a festival of wokeness. I stole that.
Is that all in quotes? Is that all in quotes?
Yes. You know, universities are a festival of wokeness. Yeah. Like, yes. But there's a definite, like, it was a feeling of like, wow, like this, like, we're talking about race and we're talking about gender identity and we're talking about like we're talking in real terms. And not that higher education is perfect, but I feel like people can talk about these things without, there was a little bit less defensiveness. There's a little bit more recognition of, you know, white privilege. And it was just a different vibe, right? Yeah. Than what I was used to, particularly coming from orchestra world, presenting, performing arts centers a little bit more, diverse just based on what we do. But, you know, like, I felt like, wow, I can actually, you know, talk about racial equity in the arts. I can actually bring programs that are talking about disparities among Blacks and Latinos in our industry and Black and brown folks telling Black and brown stories on our stages without any real worry that my audiences were going to be like, oh, I don't know how I feel about that. And that was exciting. And, you know, I really wanted to come to a place like the Marcus Center. That was kind of like a gig that I was aiming for, you know, as a destination job. You know, president and CEO of a major performing arts center in a large city is a great gig, and that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I was really cautious, frankly, when I talked to other recruiters about other gigs, because, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't want to lose that feeling that I had working for a university. And when I talked to the board at the Marcus Center about what their goals and initiatives were, I was like, okay, this is a place, like, I can be myself here.
Yeah.
As we say now, our authentic selves. I can be that. Like, I can talk in real terms. And we started talking about, like, in a city like Milwaukee, you know, racial equity is has to be front and center.
Yeah.
Because it's a real problem in our city. And yeah. I've been really inspired by, you know, the powerhouse triumvirate that I refer to as our county executive, our county council president, and our county board chair, David Crowley, Chevy Johnson, and Marcellia Nicholson, because I just, like, I see these young Black and brown folks, you know, who are leaders and who are really making change. And, you know, the county's racial equity initiatives really kind of inspired some of the work that the Marcus Center is doing. So long answer to the question, but, you know, I, like I said, feeling, being in a place where, like, where the board in particular and the staff are so committed to those words, racial equity, diversity, and inclusion, we actually refer to it in our organization as READY.
Right.
So racial equity does get prioritized because we know in what we do, we're still working to create a better sense of belonging for people of color in our business.
You know, Kendra, when you say this, I'll just share my own personal experience with the Marcus. I've lived now in Milwaukee for 11 years and I've seen several shows there. When I think of the Marcus, I think of, like, oh, that's where I saw the band's visit. That's where I saw Hamilton, right? Yeah. Like, it's this notion of, this is the stage where, when we import, if you will, the shows, if you will, from the country, you know, but as well as the local stuff, that's really great. You know, so in a sense, right, this is the platform, right? And so to know that, and this platform is being led by someone who's holding, you know, a strong orientation to going, making sure that we are going to make sure that this is going to be a vehicle for racial equity, be it who's working here, be it whose stories are told. You know, I think that's really exciting, right? Because in a way, you are affirming, like, because in my mind, the Marcus is like the stage for the thing. And so knowing that, and again, things aren't going to happen overnight, right?
Exactly.
These things are going to take time, but it is like going to be a long haul, right? And that's exciting to hear, you know, that you're committed to that. And again, it's not talk. Now, granted, here's the beauty of it, Kendra. Every day is a micro opportunity to prove cynics and skeptics wrong. You always gotta be walking the talk, right? And that's the invitation.
As good as your last trick.
This is where it is orchestra talk radio, right? I'm sure, like, you're gonna get the grumble, but I think my hope is that, you know, you hear those complaints as opportunities. It's like, well, we've got this platform, we can do better, you know, and we're gonna do better.
And here's the reality. Marcus Center was doing this work long before I was here. You know, they had this commitment. What they had called it at the time was community engagement and inclusion. And I feel like, you know, the Marcus Center's actually done a pretty good job with that. When I took this role, our board was 35% people of color. That's pretty
good.
Significant for an arts and culture nonprofit board, right? Our staff, we're about 30% people of color on the entire staff, but what we realized is we have some work to do with leadership positions. So, like, you know, the director and above level, people who are decision makers in the organization, you know, more diversity, racial diversity in that area, or shall we say more diversity that reflects the diversity of Milwaukee.
Right.
And we're not quite there yet with the staff. Mm-hmm. So we started kind of really looking at, you know, these metrics. Like, decision-making roles, in my mind, what I've come to is decision-making roles is where we got to focus. Mm-hmm. C-suite, boards, funders.
Yep.
Like, it's not to say that diversity across the board is not important. It absolutely is. But, like, I am a big believer, particularly now that I came into this role and I could see the movement that I can personally make as president and CEO of an organization. Like, that's where we got to focus. And I think, you know, if this is just Kendra's opinion, but, like, I think when people talk about, oh, we're really working on diversity, you know, on our staff, it's like, that's great. but then the board doesn't reflect that. Mm-hmm. Or people who are in the leadership positions don't reflect that. Or you have a lot of diversity in your organization, but you know, all your VPs,
yeah,
you know, there's no people of color, except maybe in that HR position that's also doing the EDI job, you know, yeah. which is kind of what it is.
That's and rough. Yeah.
I serve on this consortium of CEOs of performing arts centers across the country. There are 50 of us, everyone from Marcus Center to the Kennedy Centers on that group. We sit on a call every 2 weeks and talk about various things in the business. And, you know, the first thing that popped up to us after we all put our Black Lives Matter statements out, you know, after George Floyd was murdered, is we're sitting on a call with 50 squares and two of those squares are people of color.
Yeah.
And like, what can we do when we all wring in our hands? What can we do? It's like, well, maybe we can focus on the C-suite. Like, look, yeah, like this, we can influence this, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of what we've been doing, is looking at, you know, programs to help our middle managers of color consider the C-suite, and to have search firms and boards make sure to focus on this as like a real way to make change, not only within, you know, management, but also within board leadership. So, you know, that's really translated to the work we're doing at the Marcus Center. And I have a phenomenal executive committee and board leadership who, you know, really believe this, a number of whom are white. And yeah, are like saying, we need to do this. And right, I think that's, you know, I just feel so motivated and supported to be able to do that. It's not like just Kendra is doing this.
It's not your campaign, right? It's not your soul, you know, and we hired Kendra to do the thing. And it's like, that's
correct.
That's not going to happen, right? As an outsider coming into some system, you know,
exactly.
The ecosystem has to be fertile. Right. Yes. As I maul Earth Day analogies, you know, and the other thing, Kendra, that you're reminding me of, you know, again, before coming here to Imagine, I did work at Public Allies and studied the nonprofit talent pipeline. Yes. So everything you're resonating with me, like there was a mindset many years ago. It's like, well, we got to skill people up. We got to train people for executive level. But after a while, when you look at this, you look at the raw data of our alums at Public Allies, we would just see people hit the ceiling. They would be at the entry level, supervisory level, C-suite, which again, nonprofits are relatively flat anyway. So you're really talking about big box retail nonprofits that have a layer that could be VP or division leaders. Mm-hmm. Totally, you disappear.
Yes.
And at that point, it's like, you know, it's not that these folks aren't skilled enough. There are other barriers, i.e. boards that don't see folks have access to wealth networks. So then they're afraid they won't raise money and things you're saying. And to your point, what does it take to not just build the bench, but to remove the barriers of who's perceived as ready for leadership and these things? So it's really exciting to hear, like everything you're talking about to me felt like the recommendations that, you know, our folks are putting together. Like these are the things you have to build in your system. And it sounds like you already put it there in your system. So I'm excited to hear that. So,
you know, Mac, one of the things that have come out of this, you know, for me in the last year in particular, is exactly what you're saying. It is not a pipeline issue.
Yeah.
You know, we keep talking about pipeline. It is not a pipeline issue. One of my colleagues referred to it as a broken doorbell issue. Mm-hmm. That a lot of these, you know, when you're talking about recruitment, we tend to kind of go to the same well, or we go to people we know.
Yeah.
And people we know are recommending the people they know, which are probably not, you know, the people that are outside of that sphere. You really kind of hit the nail on the head. So like when we're ringing the doorbell to have more diverse folks in and more people of color in C-suite positions, we need to make sure that door, like they can hear that doorbell ringing, and that we're ringing the right doorbell, and not really talking about like, well, we need to start with high school and, you know, when they're looking at college and blah, blah, blah. It's like, yes, there are Black and brown folks, BIPOC individuals that are ready for that C-suite right now.
Look in your front. Yeah. Look in your offices right now, you know, and guess what? They're voting with their feet when they leave, because they're going to environments that they hope are going to be more inclusive to them, right?
Or yes, reward them for and where they have a trajectory.
Yeah.
So yeah, totally with you on that.
Yeah.
You know, the moment is right, obviously, for this racial equity work at Marcus Center, in the city, in the nation writ large. Almost also curious, in addition to that, really tangible work that you've put forward around racial equity in the last year, we've also been in the middle of a really unprecedented pandemic. And I'm curious, you know, just to add to the layers, from an operational perspective, what has been some of the learnings coming out of this past year that might influence your work moving forward?
Oh, so many things, right? So I think even simple things, frankly, like efficiency and productivity that I did not even realize was possible. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought, I was always a person who was like, you know, you got to be in the office, work mm-hmm. from home, no work, remote working, it doesn't work. You know, reduces productivity.
Kendra, that shows what side of Gen X you are, right?
Like, totally, right?
You're right. Yeah, like, yeah. I'm with you on that. But then
there's
a shadow side of me that would always yearn when the folk, the generation after, like, I'm going to yoga at lunch, and I'm like, oh, I wish I could be you. But I was wired the way you just talked about. I gotta sit at my desk, and I gotta
I'm in here.
I gotta do the thing. Yeah.
And I have found, we have done so much, like the staff has been so productive over the last year. And we were just having this conversation actually at the CEO call that we have every 2 weeks. It's on Thursdays. And there was this conversation, and it's interesting hearing my colleagues also, you know, who have the same perspective as I, who've really changed on that. Mm-hmm. Like, and one of my colleagues yesterday brought up the issue of equity there too. Mm. Like how, you know, we've always been like, you know, particularly moms and dads now too, who, you know, have childcare issues or are trying to juggle, like, I don't even know how people juggle their kids doing school remotely while they're trying to work in the other room. Like, I just don't even know how they do it. And I have a lot more empathy, I think, now for balancing, you know, the quote unquote work-life balance. That has really been a big change for me. I know that sounds like a kind of a small thing, but, you know, from a culture standpoint, I feel like it's something that I feel has positively changed my view on that. From a true arts and culture standpoint, you know, being really intentional in our programming. Mm. So I think, you know, as we talk about racial equity, again, we've always talked about, well, we want to make sure we have a diverse mix of programming. Like, we want to have that thing, we got to have that thing, and, you know, make sure we have, you know, this and that. And now I think we're really thinking about, all right, you know, at a minimum, we need to have, you know, this percentage of BIPOC voices telling BIPOC stories on our stages. Mm. We're going to exceed that, but I want to have at least a base. Mm-hmm. Where we're not like, well, in 1 year we have, you know, it's a wealth of riches, and the next year it's like a drought when it comes to, you know, who's on our stages. So, you know, kind of circling back to our racial equity work, you know, now we're really looking at putting that towards programming too, putting metrics basically to everything we do. Mm-hmm. So it's very intentional. And that's something that I think, you know, was not part of the mix. Like, we kind of thought about it, and I say this from other organizations where I've worked too. Mm-hmm. We're like, oh yeah, we want to make sure, you know, we have a mix of things, but it hasn't been as intentional. Intentionality has been a real lesson out of this year, that like, this is something we need to do as we come back. You know, I think from a financial situation, you know, we're all really looking critically at business models. Mm-hmm. And mixing, you know, in the performing arts, performing arts centers are a little bit higher on the earned percentage, earned revenue versus contributed, where like producing organizations like symphony, acapella, theater, they tend to be a little bit higher on the contributed side. And I think we're all thinking we need to diversify our revenue streams. Like, you know, if you're 85% earned and then your business shuts down for a year, it's like, wow. And we're a nonprofit, like our colleagues, like Pabst and stuff, you know, they're for profit. So that's their raison d'etre, is like to, you know, do that. So that's a huge hit to them. Yeah. But for organizations like us that are also have a big mission component, like we really need to think critically about how to diversify our revenue, and maybe not go to the extreme of, you know, 75% of any bucket of revenue, whether it be contributed or earned, is where we go, but really kind of making that mix. So that's something we've been thinking about, you know, as we come back to bringing people together and earning revenue again. earning, you know, selling tickets again. You know, we also have to think about like, how are we really putting out our mission and making sure people understand that we're also bringing a lot to the table that doesn't generate revenue. Mm-hmm. And, you know, trying to build those individual and foundation contribution. So that's been a big lesson, I think, too, in all of this. Like, nothing's for sure anymore. You know, it's like, 2008, I think we all thought, oh, you know, this is a one and done thing. Like, this is crazy, you know, financial crisis. And, you know, we all kind of went through a panic and a lot of folks didn't make it. A lot of arts organizations didn't make it after, you know, 2008. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, well, that's, you know, now we've learned that lesson. And then this happened, which had an even more catastrophic financial impact. So now you just have to be like, we just need to plan for catastrophe.
Right.
You know, you don't think in those terms as an arts organization. You know, you think of like, well, you know, it's an election year. I don't want to program anything in November, or it's this and that. Like, I don't want to do anything on the Super Bowl, or, you know, oh, I know this festival is going to be in town at this point, and that could affect our programming, whatever. Now you got to think about all the other stuff. Like, what if our business has to cease operations for a period of time? Like, how are we going to, how are we going to weather that?
Well, to the end of diversification, I thought we were going to break a big story about the new line of Marcus Center for the Arts housewares that was just going to be announced. Just really functional, but also connected to, you know, performance. You got to perform in the kitchen.
There you
know, have a Kendra pepper shaker and a cheese grater.
Oh yeah,
I you can take the idea. I know it's workshop it, but I'm just
okay. All right.
I was really hoping you're gonna break it, but
Mac wants you to know he's available for hire when you're ready to create
If you just need ideas, I'm your guy. If it's about execution, I'm not your guy. I'm not your guy on execution side. It's just hey, talk to Mac and he's in a room. Just like, like Minority Report, I'm in like the tank and like thinking the future. Yeah, I'm with those other dolphins.
I love it.
So speaking of, you know, as we transition out, you know, you're a powerhouse, Kendra, but we have power here. Lindsay and I have the special power of making all of our guests when they're here the city's czar of arts and culture.
Ooh,
that's right. Perfect. Everyone at home
that was the right reaction.
Listening in their commutes, their new commutes to their new places.
Yeah.
I learned a new term, POCO WOMO. Do you do that? Post COVID working model. That was one of new term that somebody taught.
What's your
POCO WOMO? Your post COVID working model, which probably includes more POCO WOMO. What's your post COVID working
FOMO.
Model? So
WOMO.
Now I my hope is that it's more commuting because then that'll bump up our listens because people are listening less. Anyway, all this being said, you've got the power, but you got to work quick. It only lasts to the end of this interview. So share with us, what is the first policy that you'd pass as the city's czar of arts?
You know, I'm gonna get controversial here.
Now you're gonna get controversial? Like now it is? All right. What have been the previous 30 minutes? All right, go ahead.
I feel like that's like just kind of standard fare now. Like I could say, you know. So when I was in Denver, I was blown away by this program they had called the Scientific, Cultural, and Financial District, FCFD.
Ooh. Okay.
And the FCFD.
The FCFD.
Tax.
No, man.
A sales tax.
Sales
very
tax.
Small, like whatever. I don't know. It was like a penny or something, 2-3 cents. I have no idea.
Yeah.
That tiny sales tax resulted in some crazy amount of money every year, $60 to $70 million for Denver County Arts and Culture.
Wow.
And that was divvied up over the, I think it's 7 counties within the Denver Metro.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty big. It's a lot. And I was so impressed with how FCFD came about, which I think was maybe 15, 20 years ago. They just, you know, re-upped it recently, and how they administered the funds and how it really brought forth an arts and culture scene that probably wouldn't exist if FCFD funding didn't exist.
Right.
Now, we all know that culture taxes are, not just in Milwaukee, but in general, are a controversial topic.
Yeah.
But I feel like the benefit of that in raising up the arts and culture community, if I were the czar, I think that's something I might want to look at.
Yeah.
Because it works and it really has a very low impact on, the taxpayer, I guess, because it's part of the sales tax. Now, again, this is controversial because I know there's all issues with sales tax and I'm not saying Milwaukee should do that, but in my fantasy world of being arts and culture czar, I was just really impressed with that program. And I think it's something that could be a model for other cities.
I think what you're also speaking to is to have a thriving ecosystem. You have to invest in it. Yeah. Right. And I think, and I'll say this on your behalf, so you're not in quote unquote trouble. There is a lot of funding for the arts in Milwaukee. Right. Yeah. But we know the stats show you the public financing of it is lagging.
And that's
what you're speaking to. And that's what you're speaking to. What is the opportunity for public investment, because public benefits all potentially. Yes. And when I say all, it's not just folks as a potential consumer of, recipient of the arts, but potential creators, creating a more conducive environment for people to create. I mean, a higher floor so people can sustain themselves in creating the art, whatever field, et cetera. And that's
exactly the point, sustaining themselves.
Yeah.
And it's the creative economy, as we talk about.
Right.
And what it pushes back into, the vibrancy of the city. But that's what we're talking about, public support. We have a lot of extremely generous
We are so happy for our private. We are so grateful for our private supporters.
And I Marcus Center certainly benefited from that. But, we also benefit from public support from the county, which is for which we are also grateful.
Yes.
But I think, rising all ship, that tide that rises all ships with public support, it just really enhances a community. And it's a fact. It's not a criticism, it's just a fact. We unfortunately don't have that level of public support for the arts, compared to other cities that I've been in. And I hope that's something that will change. And I actually do know that our civic leaders also see this as a problem and want to ensure that arts and culture does thrive. But there's a lot of competing priorities in the city and county.
Get in line, right? Get in line and start elbowing for a spot.
I recognize that too. I think, to be fair, and this is not a kiss up to our public representatives, but it is reality. We also have challenges here from a municipal funding standpoint that other places don't have.
Yeah.
We
can't tax ourselves. We can't even tax ourselves.
Right. So we have
as a county,
as arts and culture community have to balance that, advocating for ourselves and the funding that we need, to be a vibrant contributor and creative economy with the financial realities of, our city, county and state governments. I totally recognize that. And I still am going to advocate. Yeah. I'm still going to say we need
you wouldn't be doing your job, Kendra, without elbowing. Hey, come on.
We still
I get you need to fix that bridge and come on.
Yeah. You need to fix that bridge and
when the time comes that we can start to make that argument, we're calling you in.
It's
1 cent. 1 cent. Come on. We can do it.
Whatever it is, I'm making this up. I'm like, I should actually do research on what it is.
Sounds right.
That is.
We'll find some nerds.
But it's like something insignificant.
We'll find some nerds to do the math. We'll find the nerds to do the math.
It's
we'll
a third of a cent. So I don't know. It's just
Well, Kendra, that was a glorious term as czar. And although it ends at the end of this episode, we look forward, Lindsay and I and the team at Imagining will continue, want to keep building that legacy, which is trying to build a vibrant ecosystem, which is to make sure that folks can sustain themselves. Our artists and creatives can sustain themselves to create it and make a vibrant city, an inclusive city. Yes. How can our audience find you, Kendra? If not personally, how can they find the Marcus?
MarcusCenter.org is a really good place to go. You can hit us up on all of our socials. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Insta. Yeah, I'm so hip and cool. even though I'm a Facebook person, which totally, you know, shows how, what my age is. But yeah, no, one thing to keep in mind is, you know, next season, which for us starts in September of 2021, we're going to be rolling out a whole new set of series in arts and culture that people should keep an eye out for. You know, we're also trying to bring a lot of the arts and culture programming that sometimes misses the Milwaukee market. Mm-hmm. We're hoping to fill that gap, particularly around dance and jazz and global music. Wow. And if you hadn't heard, Hamilton's coming back October 12th. So
start printing money, Marcus Center, because that's a winner.
Well, start getting your vaccines, people.
So we can have people
in sit shoulder to shoulder, because we can't afford to bring shows like that if we can't have full houses. So that's my parting words for you. Get your vaccine. Vaccinate.
That was a lot of fun. I was really energized talking with Kendra, and I'm so excited that she's leading that institution.
Yeah, I feel like you, at least my assumption going into conversations with high-powered leaders like her is you don't know what you're going to get. Like, is she going to be really, you know, say what you think she's going to say? But no, I think she was a wonderfully open guest, and I was excited to learn more about her perspectives and what she's bringing to her role at the Marcus Center.
And just the real deep enthusiasm for bringing art and bringing artists and featuring them, which goes back to her old story about being in high school and doing a recording with her classmates. You know, what I love about that story is I can imagine some of her classmates going, "This is weird, but I'm so glad I got invited to do this," because they wouldn't think to do that. It's so neat to have people like that in her life. It's so great that Milwaukee has her leading that. So we're excited to see the Marcus. I'm excited to go back there and excited to see the continuing programming they're going to do under her leadership.
You know who else we like to see leading, Mac?
I don't know, Lindsay, who?
Our listeners.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. Or contact us directly at pod@imaginemke.org.
Imagine This Podcast is a team effort produced, edited, and hosted by Mark Carter, Antigua, David Lee, and Lindsay Sheridan, and is the flagship of the Imagine MKE Podcast Network. Make sure you also listen and subscribe to Black Imagination, as well as listen to our back episodes of Arts Forward MKE, all of which can be found at imaginemke.org/podcasts.
To catch all the latest from Imagine MKE, hit us up on Twitter and Instagram @imagine_MKE or Facebook or LinkedIn @imagine_MKE. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next Tuesday.
Till Tuesday, voices carry. Bye.
What?
I'm making that a bit, David. I'm making that a thing. That's my new sign off. Voices carry.
What is that?
I get it.
That's my little, there's a song. Wink and a nod to Gen Xers.
Voices Carry by a band called Till Tuesday.
Oh.
Led by Amy Mann. Or back then.
Back then, led by Amy Mann. Yeah. Amy Mann.
Okay.
Yes. Good. This is our explainer. This is our post episode explainer to all the non Gen Xers out there.
You know, yeah, I need that. I need that info.
You're not the only one.
Who would later go on to an incredible solo career.
And Mary Michael Penn?
And Mary Michael Penn, that's right.
They'd make indie singer-songwriter family people. What was his big track?
No Myth.
It's No Myth? No Myth?
Yeah.
That song still slaps.
100% still slaps.
Still banger. It's No Myth. I think you'd like it, Lindsay. No Myth, Michael Penn, look it up. I think you like it. I think it plays when I think of the algorithm of Spotify songs you brought to us. I think it would play.
The Lindsay, thank you for that real life algorithm.
Do we need to share it on the screen right Punch now Brothers. so that Lindsay can hear it for the first time?
I don't want to watch her listening to it, because then I'll be disappointed when she doesn't like it. It's just awkward all around.